The flight director and the CAPCOM are working 24. You can see where this is going. So if everybody gets about half a dozen failures for the day, it was a good training day, and the number of failures, I mean, it was like somebody, it wasn't just like somebody lobs a tennis ball and you fire it back. It's like a rapid fire Gatling gun of machine, of tennis balls firing at you, doing it. And because you do that all the time, when we actually have a lot of failures in flight, we rarely had a lot of failures in flight. We'd have some big ones. I remember one where we were sitting there in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, our main guidance, navigation, and control computer just stopped. And the crew was awake, so we had to bring up another one. They brought up another one. And after a few hours, our DPS, our computer person, and our GNC person, guidance, navigation, control person, came to us and said, "We think we know what's happening, and we need to get on a third computer really fast." We were testing a new GPS system. It was new back then, and somebody had made a mistake in the computer code, and it was counting up every time it did a fix. And this count was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it overflowed into another register, and it took the G2 set down. And so we had to rapidly bring up another computer to get there. And those are just kind of things you're sitting there working, and you've got dozens of people in the back room trying to figure this stuff out as it happens. So that was kind of fun. It's kind of like your ISS computer thing, except you ended up with nothing.
Yeah, on the ISS, we had a similar kind of thing. We have three main computers on the space station, and they run everything. And we were introducing some new software we were using for the robotic arm that had just come up. And when we were going through the procedure, it goes out to this new software to get something and brings it back to activate the arm. And when it went out there, it found a problem, so it shut the computer down. It said, "Something's wrong, it might be me, so I'm just going to shut down." The backup computer took over, no problem at all. We looked at the procedure. The second step, I think, said, "Check MCC, Mission Control Center," because we were really early in the program and we didn't have a lot of procedures. So we called them, not Paul.
I won't blame you, Paul. I wasn't ISS at the time.
Yeah, but we called the ground. And they said, "Okay, well, we're working it. You guys just go back to work and keep working your procedure." So we went back to activating the arm again. It went out, looked for the software, had the same problem. It said, "Oh, I must have a problem." It shut down. So we had two computers down. And they had brought up the third one as the backup, so it was now the main computer. And we called again, and they said, "Just keep working." You can guess what happened. We tried to activate it again. It said there's a problem. It shut down the third computer. It got really quiet because it shut off everything, all the fans, and we got alarms, everything. Well, no, we didn't get alarms because the computers weren't working. It just got really quiet. And it was amazing. We said, "Okay, what do we do now?" We didn't even have radios because they didn't work. So we went over to the shuttle that happened to be there. And we called the ground and told them, and they said, "Okay, we're working it. You guys just relax. You're in a safe attitude. Everything's okay. We'll just work on this." So we didn't know what to do, so we went and had tea. And we just relaxed while hundreds of people on the ground were solving this problem and figuring out what to do. And luckily, there was a software patch they had left in. I don't know if it was accidentally or they didn't have to remove it, but this little software patch was the only thing that allowed them to restart the computers after they figured out it wasn't a computer problem, it was the new software problem. And this Mighty Mouse program is what they called it, allowed to restart the computers and save the day for the space station.
Yep. All right, I've been sitting here thinking which story to tell. but generally speaking, you know, for the most part, the missions went pretty well, but every mission you had things unexpected happen or have things you know, that you never trained for. And for those of you who fly airplanes, you probably experienced that too. Every time it seems like I had an airplane failure, it was nothing like a train for. That's just how it is. And so you have to be able to know what to do, when to do it, and use some judgment along the way. So I think the story I'll tell you is my flying duck story. So first flight, I was going to go fly this thing called AirCam Sprint. And it was this little robotic ball that had a couple of cameras in it, and it had 12 little thrusters in it that just used nitrogen thrusters. And it was this ball, and we were doing a spacewalk, and they were basically going to take it onto the spacewalk, release it, and I had a little joystick in a cockpit it's like a drone, and I was going to fly this thing around in space over the payload bay. And the idea was, you take this to like a space station, and if you need a camera anywhere or go inspect something, you just pull this thing out, fly it around, do your thing, and then dock it. And so, but it was done on a shoestring budget, and I thought, you know, here I am, a rookie pilot on my first flight. They're going to let me fly something around the payload bay and the radiators.
Right.
And I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, what are they thinking? But anyway, it was all good. And so so the day before, I was checking it out. And it was run. It had to run some commands through a laptop. And it had its own special laptop. And this laptop used an old system called OS2, if anybody's familiar with that. But we also had we always carried a whole bunch of laptops on the shuttle that were networked together. And what we did is we took data from the shuttle through these laptops. That's how we actually kept our avionics upgraded on the shuttle. We never actually upgraded the avionics. We just took the data, used the laptop computers to give us something, you know, we could understand better or give more situational awareness. So I start up this OS2 laptop, and I've done it a million times. I know what I'm doing. It's all hooked up right. I turn it on, and instead of getting, I didn't even get the blue screen of death. You know, I got nothing. I got this cartoon, and there was these ducks flying across the screen. And so, and you know, all of our laptops were Windows-based, except for this one. And so I called down to the ground. I called the Capcom. It was Billy Mack, Bill MacArthur, great guy. And who's, by the way, is our the expert in laptop computers for our whole office. He was really good at IT stuff. And so I said, hey, Billy Mack, I just turned on this computer for Sprint, and I got flying ducks. And I got the standard answer, stand by. Right? That's the first thing they teach you in flight director school to say, stand by.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're looking, and so he calls back in about an hour and a half, and he goes, hey, Steve, so when, shut it, you know, start it up again, and he said, when you see the Windows screen come up, hit like F4 or something, and I go, Billy Mack, this is not Windows, it's running OS2. And he said, oh, and I never heard from them again.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time in Russia, which was quite an experience. In fact, Russians like to drink a lot, and I'm not a big drinker, but I gave part of my liver for my country while I was over there. Because you have to be a strong American when you're with the Russians, and when they're drinking, they won't let you not drink unless you are a teetotaler. And then they'll respect that. Otherwise, they expect for you to toast with them. And I learned a lot about international relations and working with the Russians, and how to control myself when I drank way too much vodka with my Russian friends. But it was the International Space Station is quite an endeavor. It has 16 different nations from across the world that work together. And what is pretty amazing is how well they work together, with some incredible differences of opinion and different ways and philosophies of working in space. Boy, get me started talking about the first tourist in space with the Russians wanting to do it and the U.S. not wanting to do it. Oh, boy. But having these big differences of opinion, but still being able to work out the problems. And when we have real technical problems, working together to solve those things, having dissimilar redundancy on board, so when one system fails, the other nation's systems will keep working and save the day. And then working together and learning how to work together and developing, I think, good international relations through these technical exchanges at all levels, from the crews to the mission control centers that work together to the engineers that work together and develop all the systems and plans and the things that have to work together, and even dissimilar nations building dissimilar hardware to put together in space. They're built continents apart, and they get to space, and they all fit together, and they all work. It's just amazing and incredible. And when I think about that, I think about what a wonderful laboratory that is, besides the science they do, but the impact on international cooperation that it had.
I think what I'll tell you is about how the Russians helped me become a flight director. So about, what was it, 92 or something like that, 91, 92, we got a direction that we should try to work with the Russians in space. And there are various politics behind that, but it was a good idea. And I was asked, I was a senior flight controller, I was head of a flight control section, and I'd applied for flight director the first time when I was too young, but they'd asked me to apply, and I interviewed, and they said, thank you for interviewing, but it's not this time. And I'd done it again, and a similar result, but they said, make sure you apply next time. And then they said, we'd like you on this team going over to Russia. We're sending six people over there, and we're going to learn to work, figure out what we can do together. And we sat down from them, and it was kind of like, well, we've got this space station, they said, but we don't have a shuttle. And we said, well, we have this shuttle, but we don't have a space station, so why don't we take our shuttle to your space station? And we started working very regularly with them. Lots of trips to Moscow, lots of trips from them to Houston, and we'd work lots of long hours, and we got to know each other. And the Russians really, really like to work, not just with whoever happens to be in the position, but they want to work with Paul, because they've met Paul, and they've drank with Paul, right? Very personal relationships. And as this thing kept going, we finalized this. We were going to fly the shuttle to the Mir, and there was another flight director selection. And I really think that one of the reasons that I was top of the selection was because the Russians said, we want to work with Paul as a flight director. And so that helped me get there. And it was a real learning process about how they thought and how we thought. And the systems can be meshed, but you have to work together a little bit to make that happen. And we learned a lot from them, and they learned a lot from us. And one of the things we learned most was that when you ask the Russians to do something, the very first answer was always niet. Niet does not mean no. It means not yet. Because then you had to say, what do we have to give you to get you to yes? Right? So it was an interesting learning experience. Yeah.